Daf Chav Gimel Amid Beis, and if you see Tosus Dima Maskel Abaye, it's a little bit below that, above Tosus Dima Maskel B'Masechet, and it's about, I would say, a little bit more than halfway down the Amud. Bo Minei Rav Bibi Mirav Nachman. Rav Bibi asked the following question of Rav Nachman. Makom Havi Simon Olo Havi Simon. If the Bailim who claim that they lost the object and are able to identify the makom where the finder found the object, is that valid as a simon or it's not? Again, it's not inherent in the object, it's external to the object, it's makom. But then again, we had cases of simonim that were not inherent in the object, like minyan, and that seems to be a valid simon. Why not makom? And in fact, earlier in this sugya, we had a machlokas between Rabba and Rava about the status of makom, whether makom is a simon or not. And it seems that we came to the conclusion that the halach is like Rava and makom havi simon. Now, Omar Lei, Rav Nachman, responds to Rav Bibi's question to Nisua, we have a brisa. And from this brisa, we can come to some conclusion. We've seen this brisa before. Matza chavios shel yayin v'shel shemen v'shel tfua v'shel grogros v'shel zesim arelu shelo. Now, when he finds these barrels, even if these barrels are standard, they're uniform, there's no distinguishing mark, because they're mass-produced, they're manufactured, they're exported, they're imported. But nevertheless, if you maintain the Mokom Avisimon, Visalke Daitoch, the Mokom Avisimon, Lichros Mokom. And again, just to review what we did already in the past, there are two ways of learning Lichros Mokom. It either means that you mentioned that you found, you know, you found Tfuah, you found Zaysim, whatever it is, and he, the candidate, the loser, the Ma'abed, he comes and claims that, did you find it in such and such a place? The flip side is to say that you can announce that you found an unnamed Aveda in a certain place, and someone comes along and says, well, I lost such and such an object in that place. That's called Makom Avi Simon. That's Machlokas Rashi. Tosfos exactly how Makom Avi Simon works. But in any event, the question is as follows. The Mishnah at the beginning of Perek Elu Metzias has a long list of lost objects which have no Simon, and where the halacha is Arelu Shalom. In truth, you can go back to our Mishnah and establish from our Mishnah L'chor that Mokom Lo Avi Simon. Because in every case of an Aveda Shem Bo Simon, there's Mokom Avi Simon. So why does the Gemara have to stretch its arm out here to the case of a Braisa with Chavios Shel Shemen, etc., etc.? And the answer is that apparently the Mishnah is talking about a case, or cases, I should say, where Makom Lo Avi Simon. And to appreciate that, we've distinguished between two categories of Aveda. There's something that's called Derech Nefila. It's quite clear that, like Peres Mefuzarim, that he lost them, it fell. And there's something called Derech Inuach, where the assumption is that he left it there deliberately and he's going to come back to take it. And the difference is going to be with regard to Makom Avi Simon or not. In a case of Hinuach, he left it there deliberately, he will tell you exactly where you found it. If it's Derech Nefil, on the other hand, then the Bailim have no idea where they lost it. And when somebody, let's say, for example, if you hold like Tosis, that the Machriz, the Motzi, says, he declares, I found something, some unknown object, in the following place, ex Mokom, then the Bailim are not going to tune in on that hachroza in the case of Derech Nefila, because they have no way of knowing where they left it, and where, if they would remember where they left it, where they dropped it, they would be back there to take it, to retrieve it. But the reason why they're not back there is because they don't know where they lost it. That's why the Gemara asks from Chavios, because Chavios are very heavy, and it's very, very difficult. It's very far-fetched to assume that it's Derech Nefila. For sure, it's Derech Inuach. And if it's Derech Inuach, then you can apply the rule of Makom Avisimon. And that's what the Gemara asks. Why is it that Chavios Shel Yayin, according to the Braisa, is Harel Shelo? Why not just announce that you found the Chavios Shel Yayin? And he, the Bailim, will tell you exactly where you found it. And at this point in the sugya, we have a conclusion based on this price that makom lo havi simon. Omar avzvid ochemai askinon berakta dinara. The price is talking about a case where you found the chaviyol shel yayin at the unloading point on the of the boat. In other words, when chaviyol shel yayin are exported. And in those days, the way to do so, even today, of course, is by ship. The ship docks at a certain river, right outside the city, and then they start doing pirka, piruk. Piruk means to take apart, you know, piece by piece these chavios shel yayin. And at that point, we'll call it makom X, where they do the piruk. To tell you that that's a simon, Rav Zvid says that makom would not be a simon in a place which is so accessible to everybody, and that's where they bring the chaviyol shel yayin. Again, keep in mind that back at the time of the Gemara, it was very common that they brought wine from one city to another by boat in order to sell it. Now, I'm not sure exactly whether the buyers would take apart the chaviyol shel yayin, or maybe the sellers would go onto the boat and take whatever they wanted to buy from the boat. You know, they would do the schlepping, and they would bring it down to the riverbank, and then they would pay for it, and then take it back home, and so forth and so on. But in any event, it's very possible that somebody forgot to take it from a certain place. And again, it's Derech Inuach in the sense that the Bailim certainly know that if they forgot it, that's exactly where they got it. They forgot it. And that logically should be Makom Havi Simon in the case of Chavios. But the problem is, Omar Amar of Mari, my timer, why is it that in the case of Rakta Denara, Omar Rabbon Rakta Denara, Lo Havi Simon, the Amrina Le, we could say to the claimant, meaning to the Bailim, ki hechi disrami lididach, disrami namik lechavrich, the fact that you can tell us that this chavis shel yayin was located, was found at the Rakta Denara, doesn't prove a thing. Because everybody, when they do the piruk of the yayin from the boat, they take it apart piece by piece and they place it on the Rakta Denara. And therefore, that's not a simon. But the implication is that if there are other makomos which are not designated or rugil, you know, it's not a suyim lekach, that everybody puts their stuff down there. In such a case, makom would be a simon. So basically, the Gemara is certainly adopting the position that makom havi simon, and defending that position, but rather Rakta Denara is the exception to the rule. Ika Diyami, now we have a Lishna Basra, and this is a slightly different formulation of Rav Mori. And we have to see if there's enough Kamita between the two Lishonos. Omar Rav Mori, my time according to this version of Rav Mori, my time Omru Rabbonon Lo Avi Simon, that why isn't this called a Simon? So I don't know, what does the word this mean? That this means Rakta Denara? Or this means makom lavi simon. Diamrinan le ki hechi disrami lididach hai makom isrami nami lechavrach hai makom. Just like as it turns out, you placed your objects there on the riverbank, so too other people would have done the same thing. And that's common practice. And therefore, the fact that you can identify this makom is not a simon. Now, according to Rashi, if you take a look at Rashi, Dima Maschil, Iko di Amri, Rashi says, Nafkamina. So Rashi already is coming to answer our question. Yes, there is a Nafkamina between the two Lashonos. And that is, the Afilu Kivein Viomar Moko Moshova Mesuyam Lo Havi Simon. In other words, Rashi's assuming that according to the Lishna Basra, there was a Kloliistic statement here. What I mean by Kloliist is a rule that tolerates no exception. And Rashi is saying that the Ika D'Amri is being machmir against the Bailim, or if you will, being Mekil on behalf of the Motzi, because it's an absolute statement. No exceptions. That if you find this chavis in a place where other people could have likely, there was a certain element of likelihood that they also would have lost it in that place, that's not a simon, and that knows no exception. Now Rashi doesn't go back to the first Lishna to spell out exactly how the first Lishna might be more makel on behalf of the Bailim and allow for Mokum Avi Simon in Rakta Dinara. But he certainly implies it. He says, Afilu Kiven Vyoma Mokum Oshova Misuyam. Meaning, if, let's say, Ruvain finds a Chavish Al Yayin and he announces that he found a Chavish Al Yayin, Shimon comes along and he says, you know where you found it? You found it at the Rakta Dinara. Okay, the Rakta Dinara means at the riverbank. And Rav Mori points out that that's not going to be a valid simon because many people lose chavios shal yayin, etc., at the riverbank. But let's say that the ma'abed, the bailam, would come and say, not just you found it in the Raksa Dinara, but Rakta Dinara. I can identify exactly where you found it. You know, the Rakta Dinara is an entire section, a strip. He could tell you where it was, you know, in place 5, you know, F5, you know, in that little box. That's exactly the Mokum Mesuyam where you found it. In the first Lishna, apparently, Rashi's telling us, then Mokum Havi Simon, even in Rakta Dinara. In the second Lishna, Afilu Kivin Vomar Mokum Oshov Mesuyam Lo Havi Simon. That even though he identifies the exact place, because the second Lishna did not make any qualifications or any conditions or restrictions, but just simply Mokom Lo Avi Simon, that's all. Because of this reason that somebody else might have lost it there as well. Now, it's a little bit strange here, because if Rashi's looking for an afkamina between the two Lashonos, then Lechora, the answer should be that the second Lishna doesn't mention a word about Rakta Dinara. And therefore, the question would be is, would Makom be a valid Simon outside, in Shar Makomos, outside of Rakta Dinara? According to the Ika D'Amri, who doesn't mention Rakta Dinara, he's just making a flat statement that Makom Lo Avi Simon, it would apply any Makom. So if you look in Shita Mekubetzes, in the paragraph that starts with Kosav Rashi, he says the following, that Rashi was avoiding interpreting that the second Lishna was making a flat statement that included all Makomos, to the effect that Mokom Lo Avi Simon, because the Maskon of the Gemara back on Amud Aleph was that we pass like Rava, that Mokom is a Simon. So Rashi had to find a different interpretation in such a way that it wouldn't contradict our conclusion that Mokom Havi Simon. And therefore Rashi was forced to learn that even though everybody agrees that in general Mokom Avi Simon, the exception is Rakta Dinara, that's the only exception. Again, Rakta Dinara is a concept and a category, but it's not the general category of Mokom. Mokom in general, Havi Simon. So Rashi says if both Lishonos are talking about Rakta Dinara, so what is the Nafkamina? The Nafkamina is if he can isolate and single out a Mokom Mesuyam within the Rakta Dinara, the first Lishna would say that certainly is a Simon. No one else put their Chavis down in that exact place. Whereas the second Lishna says, well, you never know. You know, you can't be so specific. And you know, maybe on Sunday, you know, Reuven put his down in that specific place. On Monday, Shimon came down and put. We don't know how to identify the object through Makom, even in Rakta Denara, even in a case where he mentions a Makom Moshava Mesuya, Meduyak. So that's pretty beautiful. It means that the Ikad Diabri is not rejecting, according to Rashi, the principle of Makom Havi Simon. It jives with the final Maskona Namad Aleph of Rava, that the Halach is like Rava, that Makom Havi Simon, but Rakta Denara is the exception to the rule. Hahu Gavra Di Ashkech Kufra Be Ma'atzarta. Ma'atzarta is what's called a Yekev. And Kufra Rashi identifies as Zefet. Zefet is tar, and it has no simon, but he found it in a Yekev, in a winery. Because apparently what they used to do is, in this so-called Yekev, or Matzarta, what they did was, they would take the grapes that they harvested, and they would soak them and pound them in order to create wine out of it. And that's why elsewhere in Shas Rashi identifies Matzarta as a gat shel yayin. Gat is where they, you know, they had these big rolling stones and they would push them in a round sort of way, in such a way they would crush the grapes and make juice or wine out of it. Because again, Israel was always a very heavy wine producing country, and I suppose that's probably true for Bavel as well. Also, l'kami de Rav. The question came in front of Rav by this Gavra. He apparently came to Rav to ask the question, what's the din in this case with the Zefet? Amalei zil shkol l'nafshecha. Take it for yourself. And the reason for this is that, at least in this kind of case of a Yekev, makom lo havi simon. I was thinking that maybe they use the Zefet also when they take the wine and pour it into a barrel, you know, they use Zefet in order to close up the barrel. And it might be common for people to have lost this object, this kufra, in a Bei Matzarta. Now, Rav looked at the face of the Hahu Gavra, the Shoel, and he saw Chazi Daviko Mechasem. Rashi says, Mechasem means Megamgem Bedover Livo Nokfo. He wasn't happy with the answer. He was still quite anxious about it. In other words, he wasn't comfortable with the fact that Rav allowed him to take this Zefet for himself. You know, he wasn't sure, he wasn't secure. Maybe it belongs to someone and he should really be returning it. Amalei, so Rav said to him, Zil plogle lechia bri mine. You go ahead and divide it between yourself and my son Reb Chia. Meaning there's no chashash here at all of any type of isur gezel. Harai, I'm going to allow you to split it with my son Rabbi Chia. It must be mutter. And the Yavitz here asks, well, why didn't he take it for himself? Why didn't Rav say, I'll split it with you, or give me a drink, give me a swing of this, well, I shouldn't say drink because we're talking about Zefet here. But let me take half the Zefet from you. So that, says the Yavitz, based on a sugya in Yevamos, is called Harchek Menakir, meaning when a posek says to you that something is mutter, and then he enjoys the benefit of that psak, that doesn't look too kosher. The Gemara talks about a case of a Talmud Chacham who paskind about an Anashis Ish that her husband has to divorce her. And the Gemara establishes that he shouldn't go ahead and marry her, because that would look like a dover kiyar, you know, oh, fat, look what he did. He was matir her in order to marry her. When I say matir, meaning he asked her on her husband, and after the divorce, he the Chacham, is going to go ahead, based on his own ruling, and marry her. Lema kasova Rav Mokom Lahavi Simon. So how do we understand Rav? Is Rav saying something about the fact that you found the Zefet in a Matzarta, in a Yekev? Or is he saying that in general, as a universal rule, there is no reliability on Makom? Om Rabbi Abba, Mishum Yeush Bailim Naguba, De Chazak, De Kadche Be Chilfe. In other words, Rabbi Abba reinterprets this whole story about Ahu Gavra, the Ashkech Kufra Be Matzarta. We're not talking about a classical case of an Aveda, but rather we're talking about a Yeush Bailim, meaning that the owner of the object deliberately and actively made it hefker. And how did Rav know such a thing? Because a long period of time apparently had passed since the zephet was sitting there. It already was growing. You know, the kotzim, the thistles and the thorns were growing all around it. And that happens after a long period of time is passed. And that proves that there was already Yeush Bailim. And we could derive from this that even if it's a Dovr Sheish Bo Simon, if it's clear that it's been there for such a long time, and therefore the Bailim were Mesyayish, then anyone could come along and take it and keep it for himself. Find his keepers. But Rashi, if you take a look at Kufra, Rashi says, Dovar She'ein Bo Simon Havi. Why does Rashi limit this to a Dovar She'ein Bo Simon? Obviously, if there's Yeush, that would apply even to Dovar She'ein Bo Simon. And I would suggest that Rashi is only saying Ein Bo Simon according to the Havamin. The Lamaskana, when the Gemara introduces that there was an active Yeush Bailim in this case, then it makes no difference whether it has a Simon or it doesn't have a Simon. Now, the Ritva is bothered here. Just to review that last point of Rashi, that in the Havamin of the Gemara, we didn't know Kadchi Bei Chilfe. We thought it was a classical case in Aveda. Within that framework, Rashi says that it's a Dovar She'ein Bo Simon. And that's why Harelu Shalom. That's why Rav Paskin, that he can keep the Zephet. But in the Maskona that we're talking about Yeush Bailim, it could apply even to a Dovr She'ein Bo Simon. And Rashi would certainly embrace that opinion. The Ritva is bothered, wouldn't the owner of the Yekev, why wouldn't he acquire ownership over the Zephet if there was Yeush Bailim? Midin Chatze Shal Adam Konelo Shalom Midaito. Again, I'm not sure who owned this Yekev, but it's logical to assume that some Ploni Almoni owns it. So the Ritva says something very interesting. He says that we have a rule, a limitation rule with regard to Kinyan Chotzer, that it has to be a Chotzer Mishtameres. In this case, we're talking about a Yekev, which is a Chotzer She'eno Mishtameres. That's why somebody actually found tar there in the Yekev. You know, people come in there, and perhaps that's where they eventually start selling the Yayin, I don't know. But in any event, the Ritva points out this is a Chatzah Sheinah Mishtameres, and therefore the Bala Yekev was not Zocher. Anyone who comes along could be Zocher, in this case, Ahu Gavra. And the reason it could be Zocher in it is because there was Yeush Bailim, but that's only because Kadchi Bei Chilfei. It was clear that this Chavis was surrounded, we would say, by cobwebs. Here in this case, it's by thorns. And in such a case, it's Harelu Shalom. Rabbi Shim ben Olos. Okay, now we go back to our Mishnah. And here we're talking about clay on Poria. And the Gemara has to tell us, when Rabbi Shim ben Olos of Paskins in our Mishnah, that clay on Poria you're allowed to keep. V'yeno chayv lahachriz. My on Poria, what was he referring to? Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, kelim chadoshim, shalos of aton ha'ayin. Okay, this is the sugya, my friends, of Tvius Ayin, which we discussed earlier, which means that a Tzurmim Rabbanon can identify the object, even without giving a Simon, by saying that he recognizes it. He knows this is his. Comes along with Shimon Allah and puts a qualification, a limitation rule here, because in the case of a Kli that's been used, and the Baal, the owner of it, has gotten a chance to get familiar with the Kli, he can say, I look at it, I know it's mine. I can identify that's my object. But in the case, says Rabbi Shimon Elazar, of a brand new object, you know, it's just straight out of the, you know, out of the glass-making company, you know, it looks like any other glass, and, you know, Tvius Ayin on something that's brand new, that's called Lo Sav'atan ha'ayin. The eye of the owner didn't get a chance to get so used to this object through the various shimushim that he used with the object to know what it looks like, and I can identify it. But since it's clay on Foria and it's brand new, and lo savata ma'ayin, that's why the Tzumei Rabbanan cannot possibly recognize and identify the object. Rashi points out here that the word anpuria is no trikon ein po re'iya, I should say, ein po re'iya. In other words, there's no re'iya here. Meaning he didn't see it. He didn't see it long enough to get used to it such that he can recognize it as his own henceforth. Now the truth is that you don't have to be a Tzumei Rabbanan to have a Tfiyas Ayin. Don't let anybody mistakenly conclude that only a Talmid Chacham recognizes his object. The only problem is that anyone else besides a Talmid Chacham, as we'll soon see in the Gemara, is suspect of Sheker. Yeah, he's going to come along and say what? Yeah, the object is mine. I lost it. Haraya, I identify it. I mean, that doesn't prove a thing. And the Torah says, Adrosh achicha me'imach, josh sheishalo yeramai. So we have to assume that anybody coming along and saying this is mine and he can't prove it is just a liar. Except if in the case of a Tzumei Rabbanan who says this is mine because I recognize it. And that's called Tvius Ayin. The Gemara asks, Heichi dami. What's the nature of this kli, this brand new kli? Ida ispahu simon, if it's very unique, you know, even though it came out of the manufacturers, it still has some sort of a sign on it, a scratch on it, I don't know what. Maybe put a madbekal on it with his name on, I don't know. But kilo savasana ayin mayavi. So forget about tvius ayin. Let him just give a simon. Why are you telling me, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that eino chayv lahachris? Elo what? You're going to have to tell me. Li olam de lespahu simon. I'm sorry, I skipped something. E de lespahu simon is kisav asan ayin my havi. If you're telling me, so if it has a simon, e ispahu simon, if it has a simon, is kilos of my havi, he can come along and give the simon, doesn't need to be assigned. So who cares if it's brand new? E de lespahu simon is kivasar ayin my havi. The Gemara doesn't know yet. The halacha of Tvius Ayin is this is the sugi of Tvius Ayin. Liolam de lespu simon nafkamina la dure litzurmi rabbona b'tvius ayin. That we can return this object to a scholar with Tvius Ayin if he identifies it as his own. And he says, he declares, anima kira v'shalihi. Those are the key words. He declares, I recognize it and it's mine. Now, Tosus back on Daf Yutes, Dira Masal Avol, says that in Amor it also has Tvius Ayin, but we cannot return an Aveda to him because we're afraid that he's lying. He doesn't have any objective proof. Not so in the case of a Tumim Rabbonon. He's not a liar. So the Gemara now says that Tzavasana Ayin Kimle Begavayu Umadrinale. That what Rabbi Shimon Elazar is establishing here is that if you find kelim that were used a little bit, and then Savasana Ayin, he, the Talmud Chacham, got used to seeing it, right? He used it a few times, I don't know how many times, but he used it, and he got familiar with it, he recognizes it, therefore we can return it to him. And that would apply even if it doesn't have a simon to it. Again, the question is, therefore, why does the Mishnah establish a whole list of cases of objects that don't have a simon and you're allowed to keep it? Okay, but even if it doesn't have a simon, maybe a Talmud Chacham will come by and he will identify Pitfius Ayin. So Tosus himself on Daf Chav Dalet raises this question. He says that all the Avedos, all these particular cases of an Aveda that were enumerated by the Mishnah, that's all something She'ein Regilus She'tia Behem Tfiyas Ayin. Things that, generally speaking, you don't anticipate a Tfiyas Ayin. Once you find something that the Regilus is that it has a Tfiyas Ayin, then Enoch Inami's Chayv Lahachris, in case the Talmud Chacham will come by and identify the object with Tvius Ayin. But if you find something where, generally speaking, there's no tefiyas ayin, and that would apply to 99.9% of the objects in our framework today in contemporary society, that's where the Mishnah says, Arelu shalo, v'yeno chayv la'achris. Oh, but if it's a case of clay on poria, is then, if since it's lo savasana ayin, the owner clearly has not yet gotten a chance. It's brand new. It's shining. You know, like some kalim, when they're brand new, you could see a little film of oil on it, you know, that they use. Whatever it is, there's a clear-cut indication that this hasn't been used enough. If it's not used, lo kimle begavayu, velo madrinan le. You know, the words velo madrinan are very strong, very demanding. We're not going to return it to a Talmud Chacham. That's what it says here. Lo madrinale. Talmud Chacham says it's mine. We're not going to return it to him. What does that mean? Does it mean there's a chashash sheker? We know that Talmud Chacham doesn't lie, and that's going to be the sugya that we're learning here on the bottom of Chav Gimel Amid Beis. So what are you telling me, that we can't give it back to him because it's brand new? The answer is, here's the key of keys, lo kimle. Lo kimle means he's in a toe situation. The Talmud Chacham is believed. That's assuming he could and does have the knowledge that he's claiming to have. But if he cannot have that knowledge, then without putting an aspersion on his nemunis, on his credibility, I'm still going to assume that it's a toast. He made a mistake. We find this simile in the Ritva, in Ksubas Daf Tes, in the case of Pesach Pasuch Matzasi. If he's not a baki, so how do you know that he found the Pesach Pasuach? And the Ritva says, well, that's the din of Shaviyat Nafshe, and Shaviyat Nafshe works, according to one teretz in the Ritva, even if we assume he was a Toher. The other answer to the Ritva is no. If we have reason to believe he's a Toher, because he has no experience, and how could he possibly recognize a Pesach Pasuach, then even Shaviyat Nafshe Chaticha Disura doesn't apply. And here for sure, when the Tzur Mi Rabbanon is claiming to be the Bailam who lost this object, that's a Tviya in Bezdin, we have to be sure that his Tviya is not based on a Tos. And therefore, we will not return this brand new Kli even to a Talmud Chacham B'Tviyas Ayin. The Ramban offers, in the name of the Ritv of the Ravid, a different approach to this Lo Madrinan Le. He wants to suggest, the Ravid, that there are two categories of achrozah. There's achrozah in a dover sheyesh bo simon, and achrozah in a dover sheyesh bo tefiyas ayin that doesn't have a simon. In the case of a dover sheyesh bo simon, what the finder announces is over and over and over again, wherever he can find people listening to him, that he found such an object. It has a simon in it. And that's the classical case of Hashavah Vachros and Hashavah Saveda. If it's an Ein Bo Simon, then you're potter. So what are you potter from? It's a Dovash Ein Bo Simon. You're potter from constantly, you know, perpetually, running from place to place, wherever there's a publican banging on the table and say, Rabbosai, I found an object. Who can come along and give me the Simon and I'll return it to him? That's an ongoing, perpetual chiyuv. Regarding such a chiyuv, the Mishnah paskins eino chayv lahachris if it's a dover she'ein bo simon. However, it doesn't mean that in a dover she'ein bo simon there's no achrozah at all. There's got to be a minimum achrozah. Since the possibility that Talmud Chacham will come with tefiyas ayin in a dover she'ein bo simon, he's got to be machris at least 2-3 times in a beis hakneses or in a beis hamedrash. These are the places where the Talmud Chacham is for sure going to show up. And the Mishnah did not mean to say that it's a Dovash Ein Bo Simon, you're potter from, you know, the Motzi is potter from even that minimum Chiyuv Achrozah of twice or three times in the Bote Knesios, Bote Midrashos. When it says Harel Shalom, the indication is that once he fulfilled his basic level of Achrozah, Bote Knesios, Bote Midrash, Shnayim O Shalosh Pa'amim, now he is completely exempt from the mitzvah of Hashavas Avedin L'chiv Hachroza, because the Dover She'ein Bo Simon, meaning the assumption is that in those few times that he announced the object in a Beis HaKnesses or in a Beis HaMedrash, the Talmidei Chachamim would certainly have heard, and they would have responded by identifying their object through Mokom, Mokom HaVisima. However, once we're past the two or three times in the Dovah Shem Bo Simon, then the super duper achrozah, which is perpetual and ongoing, wherever he finds an occasion to be machriz in public, he has to do so, that doesn't apply. It's a Dovah Shem Bo Simon. That's the chiddush here, the revolution of the Raifit. The Ramban himself says that there's a chiv achrozah because of Tvias Ayin, but that's only if you find the object in a place where Talmidei Chachamim are Mitzuyim Sham. That's where they hang out. Our Mishnah at the beginning of Eil Mitzis is talking about other Makomos. And therefore, if it's a Dovah Shem Bo Simon, Hare Eilu Shalo. But if indeed you found the object in a makom she Talmidei Chachamim mitzuyim sham, if that's where the Talmidei Chachamim are studying, that's where they hang out, then you have to announce it because of Tvius Ayin. Now, in the case of Klean Puri, Rav Shimon Elazar says that lo kimle begavayu v'lo mahadrinan le. And in such case, he wouldn't be chayiv even in the minimum achraza in a batei knesios, because any, even if a talmid chacham comes along to identify this brand new kli, we're going to assume he was a toeh, and he is mistaken about it. So if you find a kli that has even a miktsas shimush, and there were tashmishim, and therefore hirgil and hikiras, then we say that even if it has no simon, you have to do this first level of achraza, and you have to anticipate the possibility that a talmid chacham lost this object. He's going to come and identify it based on Tvius Ayin. He knows it's his. He's makir the object. It's mine. And there's no chashad sheker over here. So in effect, the laws of Hashavas Aveda, and the mitzvah, and the chiv Hashava, and the chiv Hachraza, really bifurcate. You know, they split in two directions, depending upon whether the Bailim is a talmid chacham, and we have reason to raise that possibility, to anticipate that possibility. According to the Ramban, it means you found it in a place where Talmidei Chacham hang out, like a Beis HaKnesses, a Beis HaMedrash. And then we have the laws of Hashavas Aveda for the general populace. And then the Torah says, Darshehu Shelo Yei Ramai. He's got to absolutely prove to you with evidence. Not enough that he says, well, I know that's mine. We're not going to trust him on that. And that's the requirement of a simon. And in a case of a kli, a Dovah Shem Bo Simon, the only possibility is to be mekayim the Hashavas Aveda of a Talmud Chacham v'tzurmi Rabbanan. Because Talmud Chacham don't lie, and we can trust them if they say, Ani makir, I recognize the object. T'yom Rabbi Yehuda Meshmu, v'hani tlos mili avidi Rabbanan d'mishayu b'milayhu. And there are only three. Again, that's what we're learning it now. We'll soon see in Tosis that there's a fourth category. But there are only three scenarios or three situations in which a Talmud Chacham would allow himself to lie. Otherwise, a Talmud Chacham is totally dedicated to Emes. You know, Titein Emes Liyakov. That's a Simon Muvhak of a Jew. In this case, of a Talmud Chacham. What are the three cases where a Talmud Chacham could lie? These are the exceptions to the rule. So one is B'Mesechet. And that means they ask him if he knows a certain mesechet. Rashi says, Yesh biyodcha mesechet plonis dura begirsa olo. Wow. Imagine asking someone about Bab Metzia if he knows Bab Metzia organized, arranged with all its details. That's a humongous task. But it is dura lo. And nevertheless, he's going to say lav. He's going to bow and say, well, I'm sad to tell you that I don't know that Masechta. Why is he lying? And Rashi says, Midas Anovahi. That is the attribute of Anova. And it's fascinating that although Titin Emes Yaakov, we spoke about the tremendous significance of dedication to truth, and Hashem's name is Emes, and Midvar Sheker Tirchak is the only Aveira where the Torah itself creates Archok and Asiag. Nevertheless, the Midas Anova is even greater, and it trumps the midah of Emes. Tosis has a kash from a Gemara in Kiddush, and the Gemara says that V'shinanto l'vanech, you should know the Torah so well that if somebody comes and asks you a question, don't hesitate, don't start stuttering, give him an answer immediately, because the Torah is there, clear, and you have it arranged and memorized, you know it on the spot. What happened to the Midah of Anova? The answer is that if somebody needs there's an urgent need, he's not just asking you, do you know the Masechta? He has a din, he has a question, and he needs a horah. Or let's say, for example, he needs a Rebbe to teach him. So in such a case, don't hesitate, give him the horah, give him the psak, or alternatively, learn with him, teach him. Here in our sugya, what the Gemara is addressing is the case of someone comes to you and he wants to test you and see how much of a scholar you are. Maybe it's for shidduchim, I don't know why. And in such a case, do you know this Masechta well, inside out, backwards and forwards? You could say, no, I don't know it. I'm sad to say. I bow my head in anova. And anova here trumps the midah of emes. Again, as great and as central the midah of emes is, and the Jewish dedication to emes is phenomenal. It's almost infinite and boundless. But nevertheless, emes of all the midos is the one. That's how Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world. He took emes and he threw it into the ground. Because you cannot have this world living on emes. There are always going to be balancing. There'll be collisions and confrontations between emes and another midah. In this case, the midah of anova. Interesting to learn this gemara based on Masechta Derech Eretz, which establishes Lamod Lashon Cholom Reini Odea. A person should train himself to say, "I don't know." Shematis Bada V'Teoches. I think what it means is that when a person asks you a question in Torah, give him a little hesitation. Don't give him an absolute answer. I have to look into it, but if you need an urgent answer, here's what it would be. Because you're always going to find that halacha is complex. Anyway, what's the second category of a case where you're allowed to lie, and a Talmid Chacham will lie? Bifuria. Now, this is funny because the word furia in Masechta Megillah means Purim. And why would a person lie on Purim? So the Marshoya says that Chayav Inish Libsume Bipuraya Adelo Yoda Bein Or Homan Lubarach Mordechai. And in the case of a Talmud Chacham, even if he's not that drunk, Mikomakom, nevertheless, says the Marshoya, he can say, "I don't know the difference between Or Homan and Baruch Mordechai." But Rashi and Tosis learn this sugya in a different way. Again, there's a little bit of a difference between Rashi and Tosis here. Rashi learns that somebody actually accosted him, approached him with a question, Shimashta mitoscha. Did you have a relationship with your wife, an intimate relationship? That's a little bit outrageous. Tosis can't accept that somebody would even, or the Gemara would even mention such an outrageous situation. And therefore, Tosis says that if a person was absent from the Beis Medrash, and back in the day there was a takana, the Valkeri, because he had a relationship with his wife, he didn't, until he was mitire himself, he didn't go into the Beis Medrash, because he had this intimacy with his wife. So somebody asked him, "Why didn't you come to the Beis Medrash today?" So Tosfos says he's allowed to lie about it. He doesn't have to tell him, reveal, or spill the beans that he's a Valkeri. He could say, "You know what? I wasn't feeling well, and I wasn't up to it, or I had to take care of something urgent, and that's why I didn't show up in the Beis Medrash." Rashi points out Midas Tznius. Before, in the case of Masechta, we spoke about the Midah of Anova that trumps Emes. Now we're talking about the Midah of Tznius that trumps Emes. The Maral Miprag has written extensively about this relationship between Tznius and Emes. Tosfos offers a slightly different shot. Somebody asks you if you slept on this bed, then, you don't have to admit it. I mean, the word puria here, according to Rashi, Tosfos means mita, means a bed. Because maybe they'll find some keri on the bed, and yizgana. And I'm not sure if yizgana here is the meat of busha that we're worried about, or more likely yizgana is because kavodat Torah, the Talmud Chacham had keri, it's not mechubat. In any event, now we get to the third category, the third situation in which a Talmud Chacham is wont to lie, be'ushpiza. Now we're going to assume that ushpiza here means an inn, or in a more general sense, achnosas orchim. So in some broader context, you're allowed to lie about an inn, or a ma'areach means a host. And the way Rashi learns it is here on the top of Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, ushpiza shalu al ushpiza ishpizo im kiblo b'sefer panim yafos. You know, it's people who are not, you know, they're a little bit uncouth, and you know, they're not your upstanding citizens in society. They ask you, where can I go, you know, to get a meal, to bum a meal, as we say. They really want to find where the money is, or where the you could find a magnanimous host that they could just pounce upon him. So they ask you, where did you find a great host? Who is your great host? And what you're allowed to do is, you're allowed to lie in that case. In fact, it seems that you have to lie in that case, because if you're going to be Megal, if you're going to reveal this for Anoshim Sheinim Huganim, that's where you can get a good meal, that's going to be a tremendous loss, a hefsed, and a lot of agvas nefesh to the host. Tosus here, Bushpiza, quotes Rashi, and after quoting Rashi, he quotes a Gemara in Erchin that says, Mevarech Re'ehu B'kol Gadol, and the Gemara speaks about a case of someone who speaks the praises of someone in a loud voice. And normally when you speak the praises of someone, Mevarech Re'ehu B'kol Gadol, is that would be Lashon Tov, not Lashon Hara. But here the Gemara in the Sugya, the famous Sugya of Lashon Hara in Erchin, quotes this pasuk, in Mishlei, Mevarech Re'ehu B'kol Gadol, Baboker Hashkem Ba'erev Klolote Chashivlo. This is called a Klola. I mean, it comes under a quasi Lashon Hara situation. And the reason for this is because the oreach, the guest, is publicly, you know, acclaim, you know, he's giving accolades to his host in public, how great he did for him. Now, Rashi seems to be assuming that, you know, we're not trying to avoid any sort of lashon hara, you know, a klola by telling you, you know, hey, that's where you got the good stuff. I mean, after all, he's not lying by saying that this host actually fed him and received him beautifully. And therefore, perhaps, there's a difference between our sugya of Ushpiza, according to Rashi, and the sugya in Erchin, which Tosus invokes. And that is, Rashi says over here that Lav Mida Tovi, on the second line from the top, that to tell these kind of lowlives, you know, that's where you get a good meal, that's not a midah tova. Rashi doesn't want to go as far as to apply the klolote chashiv lo and a kind of quasi lashon hara, because apparently in the case, in the situation there in Erechin, which is classified as lashon hara, if he boasts and praises the host, there he went very far. You know, he really said that you'll never get a better meal. You know, they're always making barbecues and steaks. You know, he went really, really far. He made it such that these Anoshim Sheinim Huganim have no choice in the matter. They're going to certainly gravitate to that person. Tosus asks the following question. V'im tomer v'amrina b'brachos orech tov ma'o omer. Omer kol ma shetarach v'alabayis lo tarach ela b'shvili. A good guest should announce the praises of the Baal Bayis. And even if there were many, many other people, including the family, the household, at the table, he should assume that all the work that was done was specifically for him. That's what it means to be appreciative. Of course, that sugyan brachos about the Oreach Tov is not necessarily talking about a public statement. Maybe that's the statement he makes at the table, and this food was amazing, and thanking the host. Tosafos says that even if he's saying it to other people who are not sitting around the table, or not while they're eating, but nevertheless, the people he's saying it to are anashim mehuganim. They are really from the creme de la creme, the upstanding people who learn Shari Tshuva, and they observe all and dedicate to all the attributes of the Midos Tov. Svahacha, but here, and why does the Gemara here encourage and recommend that the Talmud Chacham lie about the matter, is he's bein b'nei adam she'enam mehuganim. He's in a bad crowd here. Therefore, he has to be very, very careful. Now, before we get to the last kasha Tosis, which is, I think, the most fascinating kasha, I just want to point out to you that the Maral, in his Chidush HaGadol here on this sugya, he says that the Gemara is not advocating that a Talmud Chacham should say lo kiblo b'sefer ponim yofos. It doesn't say that he should speak begnuso, but rather he should find some way of getting out of it, of wiggling his way out of it, of not having to praise the mareach, the host. Maybe he's allowed to say, you know, yeah, it was okay. You know, it was normal. Don't get excited about it. Or, as Rav Moshe Feinstein says it, he's allowed to say, I wasn't the host. I wasn't the guest at that person's house. That would be a lie. Or, alternatively, he could say, well, I was a guest at his house, but I didn't eat of his food. You know, they served me food and I didn't eat it. All those lies. Again, you have to try to go down the line and lie as least as possible, but at the same time to achieve your goal, to make sure that the people who are asking you and barraging you and pouncing upon you, these anoshim shenim uganim, are not going to eat this mareach out of house and home. But now we get to the last kasha Tosfos, and that is V'im Tomar, he says, V'adlo choshev hocham mutal shanas v'nei darki sholom, kevaldi gekasha. The Gemara seems to exhaust the list of heterim for sheker with these three cases. What about a fourth case? That's perhaps the most prominent and well-known case of Mishanim ibn Asholom. And we see it over and over again. We saw it by Avram and Sora. We saw it by the Achim and Yosef. So Tosus says, Kidamrinon. Tosus says, Mishum dahani nami mishum darki shalom hemu gilim yoser me'achirim lahachi noket hani. Tosus says that all three examples of the Gemara, these three categories where you're allowed to lie, are all cases of Nea Shalom. Tosus understands that Nea Shalom is not just to avoid friction and create peace and harmony, but Nea Shalom is a generic term that includes the benefit of man. And I'm not sure if Tosfos is willing to say that in the case of Puria, you know, if he reveals that he had intimate relations, maybe his wife will be angry at him, and that's mafkiyah the shalom. I would say even if his wife will never find out about it, or in the case of Ushpiza, that the host will find out that you sent him these uncouth, unworthy guests. No, even if these guests will never make it to his house, it still is permissible to lie. And it doesn't come under shalom in the strict sense, but rather, and certainly not in Masechta. There's no inyan of shalom bias over here in any sense. So Tosus, when he classifies or subsumes all these three cases under the generic term of shalom bias, Mishanim Nei Shalom, Tosus understands shalom in the general sense that society should work together, be yedidus, be chaverus, and all the midos that the Torah expects us to live up to, if need be, will override sheker. That's called mishanin mipnei shalom. I mean, the weakest link here is the case of Masechta. I wanted to suggest something else. I didn't find at this point anyone who says this, but what the Gemara, the sugi, is looking for here in this enumeration, this list that of Rabbi Yudah Meshmuel Bahani Tlas Mili Avidi Rabbonin Lemishani, the Mishane B'milayu, is that we're talking about what I call a heter sheker. A heter sheker means that you have a collision here between two great, two great ideals. There's the ideal of emes, but there's the ideal of tzniyus, the ideal of anova and midos tovos and so forth and so on. What do you do? And in that case, you really, you know, the halacha says we're going to twist your arm and we're going to say, you know what, leave sheker on the side for a minute. That's what we call in the halacha dechuya. It's almost like ese docha losas. We're going to be docha the aver of sheker. We're going to override the aver for a greater good. And that's what sometimes we have to do. In order to fulfill a mitzvah, we may have to, in some cases, violate an avera. That's called dechuya. Meshalem b'nei ha-shalom is a whole different thing. Meshalem b'nei ha-shalom is actually the meat of emes. It's not that you're violating the meat of emes. The shalom itself defines whether it's emes or sheker. I mean, again, I'm not going to go into it now because it's not for us, but Rav Elio Dessler in the famous sugya of Yaakov stealing the brachos from Esav and telling a lie, Anochi Esav b'chorecha, to Yitzchak, he says that's not sheker at all. And he redefines emes and sheker in a certain way. Emes and sheker have a certain element of relativity, of context. In the context of shalom, we're not talking about a heter. We're not talking about permission to violate the Isur Sheker for a greater good. In the case of Meshanim Nei Shalom, that's what you have to do. You know, you don't have two choices here. It's not going to be an avera of Sheker. It's not a dechiyah halacha. It's hutra, as we'd say. This is not Sheker. That's Meshanim Nei Shalom. He denies that he knows the Masechta, or he denies that he had relations with his wife, or he denies that he ate at someone's house and the host was superb. That is a lie. But Meshanim b'nei ha-shalom means that you can, again, I hate to use the term stretch the truth, but stretch the definition of emes such that in the case of shalom, that's not sheker. When the brothers tell Yosef that Father Jacob wanted you to forgive us, that is true. Again, whether or not, you know, he Yaakov had actually formulated a tzava in so many words, well, the word tzava here can be understood in different ways in different levels. And if you take, for example, the classical case of Meshanim b'nei ha-shalom in Ksuvos Yud Zayin, of Kesa Maragna Fnei Kala, and she's got problems, you know. She's not the most attractive, beautiful Kala. Nevertheless, Kala Nova Chasuda Koin Tveis Hillel is the Shidim Kvetzer says that's not a lie. Why? Because we're redefining Shalom and redefining Emes and Sheker. And when he says Kala Nova Chasuda in that context, it's absolutely true. Rav, also before we finish the shiur, so we could put Chav Gimel as a daf behind us, I would like to learn with you a little bit of the Hemshech HaSugya and find a natural break. So we're on Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, right on the top of the page, Mainaf Gemina. Why does Rav Yehuda have to tell us that in these three cases, the Talmidei Chachamim are wont to lie? We come back full swing to Hashavas Aveda, which is the subject of our perek. If we recognize this person as someone who would only lie in these three cases, we can return an object to him and we know that he's not going to lie. If he says, I identify it, I know it's mine, that's called Tvias Aina, we give it back to me. Meshani b'mili achrini lo madrinin le. If he exceeds beyond this level, and he lies in other cases, then we're not going to return it to him. Again, why he lies in those other cases, the Gemara doesn't tell us. But we already know that he's not committed in a total absolute way to truth. The truth and all, you know, I swear to the truth and only but the truth. But here's the last piece that I wanted to add for our learning today. Marzutra chasida ignivle kosa de kaspa miushpiza. In other words, Marzutra was a guest in an inn, and the ushpiza, the host, was the victim of a theft. We don't know right now who was the theft, who was the thief, but the thief got away with a silver cup. And unfortunately, this is very common. That's why we spoke about it earlier, that you lie in the case of Ishpiza, because you're going to send him, Anoshim Shedim Ugonim, not only will they eat him out of house and home, that they might literally take out house and home. They'd start stealing things. You know, they look around and they see the break fund, it's full of silver. They say, okay, what is, you know, let's take one, you know, one cup and pocket it. I'm a poor person, you know, I could give a whole Dostoevsky thing here. I could justify it. He's got plenty of silver. I could steal one, they'll never know the difference. But in this case, they did know the difference. And Marzutra is going to come to the aid, so to speak, to the side of the Ushpiza, of the host, and identify the ganav. How is he able to do so? Chazialahu bar bei rav. He saw a talmid there in the inn. The Moshe yodei v'nogiv b'glima dechavre. He washed his hands. That's Moshe yodei, and v'nogiv, and he wiped them with his friend's garment. Rabosai, this is so common. You know, you walk out of a washing station, and there are a bunch of towels, you know, hanging on the racks there, and you forgot your towel. You know, you're desperate. You give all sorts of justifications. So this is a gneva kala, so to speak. You know, a light kind of gneva. If you take a look at the Torah Chaim, he calls it a sheker bidvarim kalim. I think he means that it's not an outright, you know, an outright lie, so to speak, or gzela, but, you know, he used somebody else's beged, and that's absolutely unacceptable, illegal. Omar Sabar Zuchu declares, Hainu hai, this is your ganav. How do I know, how can I figure out who the ganav is? Delo ichbas le'am amona dechavre. He is totally careless about someone else's mama. And therefore, he will lie. Getting back to the Torah Chaim here, he says, the reason why this case was quoted here, which culminates with Kafte Viode, that in Enoch Inami, Marzucha, with his insight, was able to identify the Ganov, and he forced him to admit and confess his guilt, and all because he saw Marzucha witness that Talmud was wiping his hands with somebody else's garment. What is this shaykh? What's the relevancy of this story to our sugya? And the answer is that we've just established that Talmud Chacham would lie in three cases, but only in three cases. Now, what about the case of Aveda? You know, you may say that Aveda, if he says it's mine, and, you know, maybe in his mind, you know, there's some confusion about it. He's not really definite and certain that it's his. And therefore, the Tfiyas Aina is a little bit, a little bit wobbly and shaky. But that would be a kind of a lie of a Dover Kal. It would be a Sheker Bidvarim Kalim. And a Talmud Chacham is not Choshud, even on a Sheker Bidvarim Kalim. Even something like an Aveda, which again, he's not stealing for anyone. Saka Kol, the finder, is looking for the one who lost it to return it to its rightful owner. So let him fudge it a little bit. Yeah, I think it's mine. I recognize it as mine. No. But the Gemara wants to establish that a Talmud Chacham will only lie in these three cases because of the absolute urgency and necessity to do so. But a Sheker Kali wouldn't do, because a person who's choshed on a Sheker Kal would be choshed even on Gzelev Aveda. As we saw here, that Marzutra saw that a person would lie what we call a low-key, low-ebb kind of sheker. You know, what does he lose if I wipe my hands? You know, it'll dry anyway. Is therefore, this bar be rav is, through that gezel, through that sheker kal, is chashud on gzela gemura, on mamish stealing someone's silver goblet. And that's what he did. And Marzutra was able to identify him and force him. Again, I don't know exactly how he forced him. Yitzhak Gubetzes goes to an extreme here. He takes the word kafsu, kafse, very literally to its polar extreme, which is a word that's borrowed from Masechet Malkus. When they gave a person Malkus, he was punished with lashes for a violation of one of the lavim. they would tie him onto a tie his hands onto a pole, and then they hit him with shotim, with lashes, and that's what Marzucha did to this Talmud. He offers another pshat that Shimon gets, is that he put the Talmud into nidui to excommunicate him until he would confess his crime. Of course, keep in mind that Marzucha was a dayan, and that's the only way we could accept the Shita Mekubetzes, that he was able to kafa also to force him and coerce him to admit his crime. Just for the fun of it, I'll end the shiur with a cute story. I don't know if it's a cute story, maybe it's not so cute, but this story I heard from my father about a situation in which all the chassidim came to the Rebbe for one of the great occasions of a Fabrengen. It was a special holiday, a special occasion. They came in mass. And what happens is, when they go into the dance floor or the dining hall, they leave their streimlich on the outside. And lo and behold, after the celebration ended and people came out, the streimlich were gone. Now, you may know this, the streimlich are quite expensive. And they couldn't find the ganav. This was a terrible thing. So they came to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, I can only tell you that I can accuse one person of this ganeva, and he's the chief ganav in town. And he summons the chief ganav in town to say, where are the streimlich? I demand the return of the streimlich. Go to your men, you know, who are part of your brigade, your mafioso, and find those streimlich. So the chief of the mafia says to the Rebbe, look, if it's one of my men, I'll get it back for you. But if it's one of yours, nothing I can do about it. And he comes back to him and he says, Rebbe, I have to tell you, it's one of yours. None of my men stole it. And now the Rebbe is pulling his hair out of his head. How does he find the real ganav? It's one of his own, one of his chassidim. And it was the time of the year where what happens is the chassidim give a kvittel. I don't know if you're familiar with that. A kvittel means they write on a little petek what they want the Rebbe to ask for on their behalf, to supplicate the Ribbono Shel'olam and pray on their behalf. And the Rebbe goes through the kvitloch, each kvitloch has a name on it, very carefully and reads them meticulously. And then he calls in Chaim Yankel into his office. Chaim Yankel, give back the streimlich. You stole the streimlich. And Chaim Yankel is aghast. He says, well, Rebbe, why are you suspecting me? And the Rebbe insists over and over again, give back the streimlich, until finally Chaim Yankel breaks down and he admits that he stole the streimlich. And the chassidim thought that the Rebbe had Ruach HaKodesh when they got their streimlich back, returned to them. But in truth, the Rebbe was able to tell it by his sheer chachma, his intelligence, his wisdom. He looked through the kvitloch and he saw, and this is what he told his close disciples, that all the other kvitloch, they were asking the Rebbe to pray on behalf of the health of their family, or perhaps the spiritual success of their family, pray on my son that he should be matzliach, he should be successful in his learning, in his Torah, in his yeshiva, pray for a shidduch. Everything was Yiddish, everything was not self-centered, but selfless, for the sake of Shamayim. But one person on the kvittel asked the Rebbe, pray that I get rich and more rich and more rich. He was only interested in money. The Rebbe suspected that's how he identified the true ganav. If all he could ask the Rebbe to pray for is money, money, and money, that's all he has on his mind, he has no priorities other than money, then he's the ganav. Okay, Rabbosai, we'll stop here.